Good morning and welcome to the Volley Nerd Podcast. This is your host, Davis Ransom. And today on the podcast, we are going to talk about recruiting. And in order to do that, we have brought in an expert recruiter, Diane Denekushe. She has a wealth of experience, not only playing, but coaching. She offers now recruiting business that is helping people, you know, achieve their dreams of playing in college. So she's got awesome information for us, and I'm really stoked to have her on the podcast. So thanks for being here today, Diane.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't we just start with a little bit of your background and go from there?
Sure. So I've been playing volleyball since I was 12. Volleyball has been my life, and part of my identity, but not all of it, obviously. But I grew up in Michigan. So I'm from a small town called Brooklyn, Michigan. One stoplight. I'm the first female athlete to get a Division I full scholarship in any sport from my county. Yeah.
Very
so
cool.
From my whole county. Yeah.
County. Wow.
And I'm 6'4". I was, 5'11" in ninth grade, 6'2" my senior year in high school in a really small town. You know, it was kind of hard, but I was just growing and growing and telling my coach, no, I'm not 6 feet, I'm 5'12", you know. It was a great thing for me from a volleyball perspective because I played softball. I was actually a cheerleader in middle school. I played football with the kids in the neighborhood. Like, I was just super active. I grew up on a lake, swimming and skiing and everything. So I was able, and I've always been pretty coordinated for my height, you know, like able to walk and chew gum at the same time at 6'4". It was just a stick, you know, super skinny and like Bambi out there on the court. But I just ended up deciding my sophomore year in high school, wow, I could play in college. Like, I did a camp at Michigan State with one of my high school teammates, and one of the girls that played for Michigan State said, wow, you could play in college. And I was like, really? Oh, okay, you know. And so I stopped playing softball and just started playing club as a sophomore in high school at a local YMCA that did like the Jackson County area. The better players from each high school, we formed a club team. And so we went to AAUs in Chicago. Okay. And I remember going to University of Rhode Island for a tournament, which I really liked that school in that area. And then we got killed by all the California teams, but I remember playing Kiba Phipps. And I don't know if you know who she is, but she's also 6'3", and I was 6'3", and I was a middle at the time. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, it was just crazy. But they killed us. It was A6 Tiger club team out of LA. And I got recruited because we were playing them and the college coaches were there to watch that team. But it was like, who's that girl on the other side of the net, you know, that can walk and chew gum at the same time? And she's 6'3". And so I started getting recruited after that. But at that time, it was just letters in the mail, you know, and you don't do anything. I just got University of Tennessee recruited me strongly, Ohio State, University of Wisconsin, Rhode Island, Arizona, but I just wouldn't go that far away from Michigan. So so it was at that time, the way that you were recruited is letters in the mail, and you just kind of, oh wow, look at who I got a letter from, you know. It wasn't anything that I was doing. So it was a different time for sure.
So where did you end up playing?
So I ended up going to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. Being from Michigan, my grandparents had retired in Florida. So we made that drive every year for like a family trip. And so I was really familiar with that Interstate 75, through Knoxville. And then I love the Smoky Mountains, and that coach, he came to Michigan and watched me practice, actually. And it was snowing, and he flew into Detroit, drove to Brooklyn, and
Wow.
watched me practice. He was really aggressive in recruiting me, but I did make a visit to Ohio State also. But then, being from Michigan, my parents are avid University of Michigan fans, and so it was like, okay.
That would be a tough
So I just love
sell.
Tennessee. The team was awesome. They had just won the SEC the year before, my incoming freshman year. So Tennessee is an amazing athletic school. The women's athletic department's separate from the men's. So they just, the women's basketball team with Pat Head Summit, where they were in their heyday, and this would have been in 1989 or in the late 80s. So it's a long time ago, but so I just fell in love with that school. And then there ended up being five freshmen, five of us in my freshman year. So we became really close. Yeah,
That's
so
really
I was full
fun. It's really
scholarship, which was
special.
amazing. My parents were never expecting that. So that was a great thing too, just for our family, I think. I went to play Major League Volleyball, which was an indoor pro league, and they pulled me out of the ranks because I was the top five in the country in hitting percentage at Tennessee. I switched to outside hitter my sophomore year in college because I just, at 6 foot 4, I have a long approach and arm swing and everything, so I just wasn't. We had quicker middles, and then I was able to hit over the block sometimes. So that was a good reason too. So I was an outside hitter, and then I was drafted to play for the Portland Spikers. So I actually left Tennessee in the spring and went and made like their taxi squad. So I lived in Portland, and the head athletic director at Tennessee, she said, "We know you're going to graduate. We'll hold your scholarship for after this pro season." So I went back to Tennessee in the summer and graduated in the fall the following year. So that was really cool.
Oh, that's
Yeah,
nice.
so I ended up living in Portland,
That's super cool.
after that, and then the league folded. Then I played for the Minnesota Monarchs, so I lived in Minneapolis, and I have a degree in marketing, so I worked in their front office, helping to promote ticket sales with the local high schools and stuff like that. And then I played on that team, and that league folded. And then eventually, I played overseas in Switzerland for 3 years. So I loved playing. I was in Basel, Switzerland. I loved the whole European indoor experience. So I did that, and then played for Belgium, Charleroi, Belgium, 1 year, and then 1 year in Italy. So I had five years in Europe. Yeah. And I would be there 8 months at a time,
That's
so
awesome.
the summers come home. And then I played on the Bud Light Pro Beach 4-person tour, and I was a middle. So that's where I was
Oh,
introduced to the
cool.
beach with 4-person.
I used to love that league. That was such a cool league. I
I
totally
played for Paul
remember that.
Mitchell, and I played with a lot of great players. National team players at the time were playing in that in the summer. So I got to play against Kim
Absolutely.
Oden in the middle, against Gabrielle Reese, against Danielle Scott. It was like all these amazing athletes, Leanne Sado, and then I played with Kristen Keefe and Janet Cobbs and Annette Davis, and just so many. Missy Kurt, Missy Ross, you probably know her. She was a setter. So yeah, we had a great team. We won a couple championships, and then I started playing doubles after that. But I remember watching Barbara Fontana and Linda Hanley practice after us with Anna Collier, and I was like, oh my God, that court is so huge, and they are working their butts off. Like, I could never play doubles, was my thinking at the time. And then they shortened the court, and I just started trying it, and decided after I had my older daughter Avalon when I was 32, I started playing doubles after that. Yeah.
So you didn't get into it
Right.
until a lot later. I thought it was a little different. That's cool. But you had a long
I
run,
did.
that pro
Yeah.
indoor. So, and then that's awesome. And then that four-man tour. That was such a fun tour. I totally remember that. Such a classic thing. And then Team Paul Mitchell was like the classic team too. So it's like,
that's really cool. Yeah, and we had 12 tournaments all over the country. It was crazy. Yeah, it was really fun.
That sounds like so much fun. That's awesome. And so your older daughter, she played volleyball. Right.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. And then she played at the club that I coached for. Well, can you just tell us a little bit about how her career played out?
I actually coached her when she was really young, like fifth grade. But I was still playing on the AVP because I played when she was born, 2000 through 2011. So, and then I have another daughter, Devin, that was born in 2004, but I just took a little break at that time. So I wasn't going to let Avalon travel. Like, I know the kids travel now, like 12 years old, you know, they travel to the qualifiers and stuff, but I just was of the mindset, like, you know, we're going to just keep her local. I coached her and just was like, okay, if she's going to be good and want to play at a higher level, she can decide that, you know, later, like 13s, 14s versus 10, 11, 12. So I did start coaching her when she was that young, but we just went to the Epic Volleyball Club local tournaments for a couple of years. So, and then she ended up in the 13 twos, and then she started making ones teams, and then she was a setter hitter. So she did really well in like a 6-2 format for high school and club. Mm-hmm. And then we started the recruiting process with her when she was a freshman, just emailing coaches and people were contacting her. And then she committed to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo end of her sophomore year, like right before JOs, but we had made eight or nine visits before she committed, and you can't do it that early anymore. But at that time in 2018, she committed at the end of her sophomore year. So almost a junior. So she's there. Yeah. She's a very setter cool. right now. So yeah. So she's doing good.
Yep. And she's a tall setter too. What is she? 6'2"? 6'2"? Awesome. Yeah. And I'm a fan of the tall setter. I was a tall setter and I think that's really cool. Yeah. And I mean, she was unstoppable in high school. I remember watching her in the playoffs and I think she hit like 800 the match I saw, like legit 800. And so, I mean, she was very talented and she could have, I think a lot of people would say, hey, just hit. Right. But I think your experience, may have helped her become a setter and at least let her down that road.
Yeah, her dad and I really wanted her to set, felt like she had great hands. And she, setter has to have like a really deep thinking mentality of just like, okay, what's going on in the game? Where is everyone supposed to be? Like, she was really proud of, you know, a whole high school season or a whole club season saying we were never called for out of rotation once. You know, and she would come into her high school with her high school coach in the timeouts. And he would be like, what rotation are we in? And what are, you know, and he would come up with really complicated rotations that she understood and could help everybody be in the right place. And she just is a calm, confident setter and player, which has helped her a lot, even in the college realm. Just because she doesn't get rattled, you know, you can't tell with her if it's 24-24 or 0-0, you know, she's really solid mentally. So I think that's helped her. Yeah.
Even keel.
Yeah. Her high school coach used to call her a cool customer. Yeah.
Nice.
So
very cool. That's awesome. Well, and is that how you kind of got into the recruiting process and interested in all that stuff?
Through all my years of playing, and then, you know, the four person, the doubles, just everything, I've gotten, most of my friends are in the volleyball world, a lot of my friends are, and I just feel like I've played with or against so many people, so it just helped me with her in the recruiting process, because I would just check in, hey, you know, do you guys need a 2018 setter hitter, or, you know, I would just start conversing with different coaches because I knew them, you know, and then I was like, okay, you got to figure out what are we going to do here? Like, I just, with her, it was just, okay, we got to take some action. Who do you want to email? That kind of thing. So her process, you know, started her freshman year, ended right before her junior year. And then she made the 17 ones at Coast, and she was the only committed player on the team. And the other parents, as we started that club season, are my friends. You know, you get really close with the parents, and they were like, how did you do that, Diane? We want to take you out to lunch and just pick your brain of, you know, how do we get started with our daughter, one of her teammates' parents. And so we went to lunch, and then they're like, well, we want to pay you. We want you to help us. You know, what do we do? And I was like, really? Okay. You know, like, I just realized that right. I love talking to other parents about it and giving them ideas. And then I could just see, like, people were really lost, you know, and what do we do? Like, how do we get started? What is this animal, the college volleyball recruiting process, you know? So I started helping Absolutely. Some of her teammates, and then it's just been all word of mouth as far as who I've worked with. Even around the country, I work with players in other parts of the country. And that's just happened where I have friends that run clubs in other areas or work with players. Hey, you know, I've got a friend that could help you. And then I just talk to the parents and the player, and then we work together on a monthly basis, and I just work to help them become verbally committed. So that's kind of the goal, but I help them work through the process kind of as an advisor or a consultant. I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that you say that too, because like anyone that loves their job, you know, they do a better job too. And I can tell you love it. And I can tell the people that work with you. We had Colleen Kennedy on, and she mentioned you as, you know, one of the main reasons why she was able to get recruited. And it's just, you have great rapport with the people you work with too. You know, you're really a niche, right? You really can get individual attention for them.
Yeah. I've been through the process myself. I've been through the process with one of my kids. I have a younger daughter who's just starting the process as a freshman in high school. Her name's Devin. And so it's just, I'm in it, you know, I'm living it, breathing it. I've been a club coach.
Yes.
And so, I will have friends that have their kids going through the process, just give me quick phone calls. And, you know, they're actually like in the volleyball world, but they still need help, you know. And then you've got the kids and the parent dynamic that I help kind of smooth that over. And I work mostly with just the players, so the parent can kind of step back. That's a nice thing too. So
okay, so let's get into the process a little bit. So I know a lot of athletes want to get recruited, but they don't know where to start. So can you tell us a little bit about like the process you would use and or recommend for a young player?
Sure. So basically, from the beginning, I find out, you know, and so as a player, the player has to really take a look at themselves, and their parents and family need to all kind of think about, you know, for sure you want to play in college because the recruiting process is really hard. And then once you get to college, it's really, really hard to be a collegiate athlete. So you have to really, really want it. And then from there, you kind of figure out, well, what area of the country am I interested in? What's kind of academic goals do you have, or career goals? And if you're a freshman, you know, it's kind of hard to know that, but just academically, you know, are you like a 4.5 student? Are you a 3-point student? And like, where is a good fit collegiate, you know, in a college, not just for volleyball, but for the academic piece, is really important to find a good fit there. And, you know, you can have your dream schools on your list, but then, the first step would be creating that list. You know, your target, I call it your college volleyball target list. And I like to have in the beginning, like 30 schools on that list. So it's just a matter of the area of the country. Then, you know, academics, level of play, you know, the Division I, II, III, NAIA, academics play a part in that, but also obviously level of play. And then the conference. So you go to, you are a Division I player, but where, you know, if you want to play D1 in California, it's going to be a little more challenging, or, you know, it's a basically a higher level because a lot of players want to come west, even top players across the country. So, you know, that's a piece of it. If you're not a D1 player in California, but maybe as you go east, you are. And I'm not saying the schools in the east are bad.
Yeah, could be.
But the Power Five conferences are, you know, the main ones that you really have to look at. Those are the top cream of the crop players. So the Power Five, you know, would be Pac-10, Big 10, Big 12, ACC, and SEC. So those five conferences, you're just like, okay, you are a top player in the country, and put those on your target list. Or you have the potential, or you can, you know, it's just talking also to your club coach or high school coach will help. They can kind of tell you, well, I think I see you more as a D3 player or a D2 player, you know, so it's just a matter of in right. the beginning, you know, the target list, level of play, to put those, you know, what schools do you put on your list? So it's really important to get a start there. And that's why I like to cast the wide net of 30, even 40 schools. Colleen had 40, 45 schools on her list at one point. So.
Right. Yes. Well, and I think a lot of the athletes don't know if they're good enough. Right. And I think what you mentioned about talking to their club coach, talking to their high school
other
coach,
opinions.
Just getting a variety of
opinions. Yeah. And the parents, you know, I've had some parents that really see, you know, a realistic picture of their kid, and others that don't. So I try to help, but if obviously if you want to enter the recruiting process, you've really got to take a good look at yourself. You can even watch a video of college matches and go, could I play at that level? And really a lot about the level, and I think you would agree as a coach, is the speed of the game. You know, the speed of the game is different in the pack, you know, the Pac-12 versus, you know, a smaller D3 school or conference, you know?
Yes. Right. And also you mentioned the physicality too.
So,
do you want to touch on that?
I've talked to a lot of coaches and, you know, it's not like a steadfast rule, but, you know, it's good to look at the physicality of the player. So how tall is the player? How strong, how athletic, how dynamic, and, you know, powerful are they in their movement? So you can actually get good metrics with, obviously, you measure your height, your standing reach, your approach jump touch, your block jump touch. Those are all very good metrics for coaches to know. And I put those in intro emails. So there's something, you know, if I had a player that could touch 10 foot two, so we had that in the subject line of her emails. So, you know, if that's the case, then you're looking at competing in the Power Five conferences. Those, I've had several coaches tell me, you know, I can't even look at a hitter in our conference that can compete in our conference if she can't touch 10 feet, you know, so.
Right. And it's just because everyone's touching 10 feet.
Right. So the game is higher above the net. Yeah. It's occurring, the hitting, the blocking, the game of volleyball is occurring at a higher point in those conferences. So if you're blocking and you're, you know, you're not blocking more than 9 feet, we're going to, you know, or, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
It's a big discrepancy there. Yeah. And then it'll make it more difficult, and you'd probably have to find some other ways to stand out if that was the case, and or just work on getting your vertical up to that 10 feet, you know, and it might not be possible for some people. It realistically, physically, it may not be possible. And then you start looking at other options, and that's great.
Yes.
Right.
The one difference with that touching 10 feet, if you've got a hitter that touches 9-10, for example, and hits the crap out of the ball, like, wow, like just so powerful and strong, smart, tooling the block, you know, does great in a fast offense, beating the block, like that, you know, there are exceptions to that rule, but that would just be like something is, you know, a player, if there's a player that's touching 9-5, and that's like the most that she's going to be able to touch, then you know what I mean? That's so.
Yes, absolutely. And then you have options. Like that's what I think the beauty of it. When they ask, am I good enough? And you hear, well, you have to touch 10 foot to play in these conferences. That's not the reality for all the other conferences.
Yeah, right? You've got a lot of, I think 22 conferences, Division I. You know, so I just talked about five conferences. So, you know, do the math there. Right. There's 17 other conferences that if you go east, you're going to have a little bit lower level of play in some cases outside of the Power Five conferences. All the coaches are trying to get bigger, stronger physical players. So just seems like there's more and more of them. That is, how physical is she, even as a libero? You know, are you strong pushing off the floor so you can run down a lot of balls? A taller libero takes up more court, you know, taller meaning, you know, 5'7" versus 5'2", you know? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and I would say for young athletes, engaging that physicality aspect as early as possible, so that when you're getting recruited as a freshman, sophomore, junior, or senior, that you're strong already. Right. It's not like you're waiting until you're in college to engage that part, especially if they're going to recruiters. That is, if they're going to focus a lot of their attention on how physical you are, because one of the things I think, and tell me if you agree with this, is coaches believe that they can teach you the skills. So if you're physical enough to really compete at that high level, they'll be able to work with you, that kind of thing.
Yeah. The athleticism if you're strong, like, if you're stepping on the court and you've lifted weights, you know, as a sophomore, junior, the coaches can see that in just your power, you know, and your quickness and your explosiveness on the court. So if they can see that, that means that you work hard, right? That means that, wow, she's lifting.
Right.
And then wait till I get her in my gym, when she gets on our weightlifting program, and I'm going to make her even better, you know? So I think kids... I mean, and this is just, my daughters started lifting when they were like 13, 14 in really simple weightlifting program. Right. Okay. But now I know, like, freshman, sophomore, they're going harder, you know, in the weight room than I ever did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I started lifting weights at 17. So, and then I've been lifting the rest of my life. Like, I'm such an avid believer in, strong believer in weightlifting for volleyball. I think it's so important.
Yes.
I'm playing beach still for fun. You know, I physically can, so I'm happy about that, you know?
The things that would be such a bummer for a recruit is they're playing hard, and then they get hurt when those recruiting tournaments are on, and the college coach doesn't have a chance to see them. So, I mean, even if they don't feel like they're crushing the ball harder or whatever, that may take some time. But just getting that process started, I think, is a really strong recommendation, because they'll, like you said, they'll be able to play longer, they'll be able to play harder longer, and play with more confidence.
Yeah,
I would say, if you're just, you know, you've put in that work.
Well, and you can last super cool. The whole day in the tournament if your muscles are strong, you know, endurance.
Absolutely. Very cool. So let's talk a little bit about disappointment in the recruiting process, because I have worked with a lot of people that have the highs and lows. You know, it seems like everyone that is recruited, they have highs and lows, and it seems like it's gonna be emotional. So can you just talk a little bit about that?
It's a very emotional process. The recruiting process is grueling, it's exhausting, it's every player I've worked with, well, I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but everybody cries once in a while, you know, in the process, like, oh my God, I've got to get 20 emails out before this qualifier coming up, or, you know, just stressed. Like, they thought, okay, I went on a visit and I thought it went great, and now I'm not hearing from them anymore. They're completely stopped talking to me. And the player's confused, you know? And so I help a lot with that, but just like, it's just, it's emotional and you have to keep going. And even now during coronavirus, it's like, it's already kind of difficult emotionally and mentally for everyone just living during this time of the pandemic. And then it's like, okay, now I've got to keep working on my recruiting, you know? So it's just staying positive and
Absolutely.
Just knowing that, you know, you're going to have disappointment and you can't expect to even start the recruiting process without having some disappointment. And then you're going to have great
Right.
times too, where the coach is getting in touch with you and you're moving forward with the coach and just learning more about their program, and they're excited about you, you're excited about them, you know, so it does happen. As far as the process
Right.
goes, I think the earlier you start, the earlier you're going to finish and the less stressful it's going to be.
Okay.
I think if a player
Okay.
starts the recruiting process their senior year, it's not a lot with a lot of girls, but it's a lot more stressful and emotional and difficult. So I
Yes.
am a strong advocate, even during the coronavirus, even with the rule changes, start as a freshman.
So when you say start the process,
yeah,
what would that
so
mean?
We talked a little bit about the process of getting that target list together and figuring out your level. The next thing is you have to create a highlight video. Super important, even more so now. I mean, you have to have it, but now because people can't watch you play, you really have to have that highlight video, 2 to 3 minutes, separate by skills. You know, if you're an outside hitter, start with hitting, you know, whatever your best skills are, start with those first, then close with a little serving at the end if you do play back row and serve. The highlight video has got to be, you know, I don't really like them to music or slow motion. Just the frame,
okay.
You know, at the beginning with GPA is important. If it's above a 3.5,
okay.
You know, your height, your approach, jump, touch, all that on like a slide as an intro slide, but just simple, a YouTube
Okay.
link, you know, and then your number, you know, and then if you're a beach player, it's, you know, the side you're playing and what you're wearing. Usually they put it at the bottom of the video.
Okay.
And then you can also put like a spotlight or an arrow over the player if you want to get really, you know, at the very beginning of each shot, if you want to get really fancy, but it's not necessary.
Okay.
So yeah, the highlight video, then that goes into the intro email. And that intro email is your very first email to the program. And so it's, you know, do they need your position in your grad year is the number one thing you have to know to move forward. Now, as a freshman and a sophomore, they can't get back to you. The coaches can't respond and say,
right,
we're done with recruiting or we don't need a 2023 setter, you know, so they can't get back to you. So you have to, I have my players study the rosters. So, you know, you look at the roster of every school on your list. Let's just say you're a setter. Setters go earlier in the process, which we haven't talked about, but you might agree. College coaches look for setters earlier. You know what I mean? So,
yes.
And then they usually take setters every other year. So you look at the roster, and would that mean that you would be going into that school right after a setter in the class before you, or would it be skipping a year, which is how they usually do it? So that gives you a little hint.
Right.
You still don't know for sure if they need you, your position in your grad year, and then how many middles do they have on their roster? How many outside hitters? This is another thing about the level, to go back to that a little bit. If their middles are all 6'3", 6'4", and you're a 5'10" middle, it's probably not going to work. You know, unless you jump really well, you know, or even the outside hitters, you know, there's
right.
a lot of 5'10 outside hitters out there that can pass, great ball control players. But if all their outside hitters are really big, like 6'2" or, you know, above 6 feet, I don't, you know, it's, you just have to look at that too, as far as level. But
so examine the
yeah.
roster, see if you'd be a fit on that roster,
yes.
Basically.
And in look at your grad
okay.
year, your incoming year, and what's happening as the years go on. You know, it's a little bit of like
okay.
a math problem, kind of a story problem. But
right.
And you have to really analyze.
Yeah.
And parents, I say, hey, parents, help, you know, help with this part of it if you right. want, if you can, if you have time. So that's a way. Another way that I really have had a lot of luck with and a lot of success with is prepvolleyball.com. You do have to pay, which I'm not crazy about, but it's not that expensive. It's like $49 a year to have a membership to Prep Volleyball. And then they have this thing called the college needs list. And then that the college coaches give their information to Prep Volleyball. So you can look up, like right now for my daughter, we can look up 2023s, who needs an opposite. You know, she's a left-handed hitter. So it's just, we could then pull from there. Well, of those 30 schools on that list, which ones do I want to put on my list? You know, so it's a way to populate your list, and you actually know they need your position in your grad year from this college needs list.
I love that. It's like a targeted, it's a targeted list based off of their needs, which is so much smarter.
It's a great thing they
than
do.
Just sending out.
Yeah, because especially when you can't hear back from the coaches yet. So it's June 15th after your sophomore year at the stroke of 12:01. AM, they can talk to you. So they can respond to you. They can, you know, if you've been emailing, so say you've been emailing them since your freshman year, then, you know, if they need your position in your grad year or not, they it would be great if they can get back to you at that time. So your list will change after June 15th because you'll get some feedback, but just keep sending them, even as a freshman and sophomore, video and emails expressing your interest. Every single email after the intro email should express your interest. I want to let you know I'm really interested in attending Tennessee and playing volleyball for your program. Yeah, because they want to know, I want to go to the school because I like the school. Like if I got hurt, I'd still want to go to school there. And I really want to play volleyball for you. You know, that statement every single email, because I call them after the intro email, then you start sending check-in emails if we go back to the process. So you've got your target list, your highlight videos done. You insert that into your intro email. I like the intro email to have a bullet-pointed schedule in there. So now, you know, the coronavirus is a whole nother topic there, but in a perfect world, you would have a short bullet point of your schedule, and then you would love for them to watch you and your teammates play and compete. And then 2 weeks later, a check-in email. I just want to let you know I continue to be very interested in your school, Tennessee, I keep saying, because it's my school, I want to play, nice. Love to play for your program. And then in every intro email, I have my players have a small paragraph. Well, why? Why do you want to go to that school? Why do you want to play volleyball there? Like, why, you know?
So consider that before you just put the email out there to the coach saying, I want to come here.
Yeah,
like, why
I think
do you
it's really interesting.
And put some thought into
and
that.
And it's a paragraph that is personal to that school and that program. Maybe that coach got coach of the year in the conference last year. You see that as you research the school. And I would love to play for a coach like you that, you know, you've had so much success in this last few years. Or I've got, you know, the other situation is they're the last place team in the conference. You know, when you look it up, and then you're like, okay, I would love to be a part of rebuilding this program and reaching your goals of winning. So, you know, it's both sides. You don't always have to go play for a school just because they're first in the conference. You want to go to the school because of the school and then be part of rebuilding.
Right. Super cool. Now let's talk about, quote unquote, the list,
Talking about getting another way we put it is getting up on the college coach's whiteboard, you know?
Yes. The college coach's whiteboard. So do they actually have this college whiteboard, and how do you get on it? And is there a short list? And let's just talk about that for a
it's
second.
A huge whiteboard in their office with all the, you know, arrows and lists and years, grad years and positions. And yeah, so ever under every grad year, under every position, you know, they know what they need. And then they have a miniature mini list under each position in each grad year. So yeah, I mean, a general question that they can respond after June 15th, you know, before you're a junior, is, you know, where am I on your list? Or I like players to even say, you know, am I in the top five? Am I in the top
Right.
three?
I like that.
Especially if you're going to move forward. So you already know they need your position in your grad year. You're having back and forth conversation. You've sent them the check-in emails. The check-in emails, as we go back to the process, work towards setting up a phone call. And then you want to get to know them. They want to get to know you. And then they go and watch you play. So they're standing at your court. They've already gotten all these emails from you. They've already seen your highlight video, your video of you weightlifting, or whatever, you know, else you could send them. Let's say club season starts in February next year at Triple Crown or whatever. They already know you. They've seen you play on video. They've talked to you on the phone. They like your personality. They know, you know, they only have a walk-on spot and you're willing to walk on there, or they have a full scholarship and that's what you need. You have to have, you know what I mean? Or a D3 school, you know, you would probably get in, like they would already have gotten your transcripts and stuff. So it's just, that's the process that I think is perfect, is to have all that information so they're actually like really primed and ready to watch you at a tournament. I mean, I've had coaches watching my players pepper, like within 10 feet of them, you know, like just standing there watching them pepper, and how hard are they working peppering before the game?
Yes, and that's such a great point. I think college coaches notice so much more than what the athlete thinks they notice, and so much differently. I think they think differently than the athlete does. And I mean, one of the things that I know when I was a college coach is just you see how hard they play, quote unquote. You can see their skills very quickly, but those intangibles I think take a little longer. And you mentioned it, like you can see just from how they pepper, how they warm up, how they are when they're a reserve, how they are when they're communicating with their coach, right? Do you want to just talk about the importance of some of that
Yeah,
stuff?
a lot. And I know I've read and heard different people talk about, you know, how are the athletes on the bench? So when you're not in the game, the coaches are watching you know, and so are you cheering for your team? Are your arms crossed and you're kind of rolling your eyes? Like, what do you look like on the bench? And then when it's time for you to go in, are you like, you know, giving your teammates five or whatever and like excited, you know, super excited, encouraging? How are you as a teammate on the court? They really look at that a lot. I've had coaches tell me that. And then I've had coaches also talk about like a setter that I was working with. I can tell she leads the team, you know. And then I've had other coaches, I'd be like, talk to them after the tournament and said, did you get to watch her play? You know, oh yeah, I watched her, but from a couple courts over because I didn't want her to know I was watching.
Yeah. So I think for the players, the message there is just do your best all the time, right? Because you don't know if you really, really want to get recruited, you actually don't know who's watching you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And so I think being the best version of yourself that you can be day in, day out, every tournament, every minute, that
Yeah.
pays off, you
And
know?
I
So I think
think
that's a great point.
even like walking between courts, they might see you. You know, I know it's starting to sound creepy or whatever, but yeah, just be yourself. Know you've done all that work in the recruiting process before the tournament, so that you can just relax and play, and you really have to focus on the other team and not yourself. Focus on your teammates, not yourself as much, and really just try to win and play as hard as you can, which you should be doing anyways. But you know, if you know you've done all your recruiting work prior, then you can just work hard and enjoy playing, you know.
Such a good point. Once you get to the tournament, I think it's the recruiting stuff is going to be in your mind, but I think what's most important, what should be at the front of your mind, yes, is your team. And like you said, yes, how we can win, how we can play the best volleyball, yes, we can, right? I know that getting recruited is an individual process in a sense, but really the coaches want, yes, team players. So it's an interesting dynamic how that goes. I've seen many times where the athletes are distracted by the recruiting process, and it just does not help,
no,
them at all. It just simply does not help them get recruited.
No, and they get stressed out about it, and it just makes it harder for them at the tournament to do their best.
Absolutely. Could you talk about any misconceptions when it comes to recruiting?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one is, you know, you can just sit back and wait and, you know, see who contacts you. I just, maybe, you know, obviously that's what I did a long, long time ago, and that's how it was. But now, I mean, there's just so many great players out there, and it's like, mm-hmm, for a college coach to find you is like finding a needle in a haystack. And it's, you have to, that's why I call my company Proactive Volley, because the player has to be proactive. You have to yes, go find where you want to go. Even top tier players that, you know, do have some, the big name schools contacting them, what if that isn't a good fit for them? Like, I still think even a top tier player has to think about where do they want to go and what school is on their list, you know? So,
great point. Yes.
So it's just, yeah, I think if there's a top tier player, but she wants to go to an Ivy League school and Stanford wants her, she's going to go to the Ivy League school. But if you just sit back and wait, the Ivy League schools might never contact a player like that, you know? So,
right, that's a good point.
So that,
yeah,
would be a big misconception, is that the player doesn't need to do anything. So I think, you know, every recruiting process, mm-hmm, the player has to own their own, and it's their own. And I really,
yes,
feel that it's a private thing, which we haven't talked about that much, okay, but I'm interested in your opinion. Is, I just think that girls shouldn't be posting if they get an offer. I don't think they should be talking to their teammates about the recruiting process, because I think it's kind of demoralizing to their teammates if they start bragging about things, if it's going well, or, you know, I think it's a very private, personal thing, your own recruiting process. So that's not really,
I think so too.
Somewhat of a misconception.
Yeah. And, well, yes, and I would agree, because there's so many things to think about that if they're putting it out for the public to talk about, et cetera, it can influence them in so many different ways that may be distracting,
right,
to them too.
And to the team.
Right? It's distracting to them,
yeah,
and to the team as well, you know? And I mean, they're wanting to get recruited and they might be in their process, but like you said,
yes,
everyone's process is different. So if I get signed early and so-and-so doesn't, it may not make that player who gets signed later feel good, even though they're getting a great,
right,
school for them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think you're right. I think keeping it private, not secret.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's secret.
Right.
I would just say it's private. You know what I mean? So it's like, if people ask you, you might tell them, but you're not necessarily trying to put it on social media. The other thing is, because, you know, having an offer doesn't mean you end,
right,
up there too. I've had many times where they get an offer from a school and then they end up going to a completely different school,
right,
for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there's just so many reasons. I think you hit it on the head to just kind of keep it private and keep it to themselves. You know, and then I'd say once you get signed and you know you're going there and it's all done, then maybe put it on social media and, hey, let's be
and
all proud of you.
This goes for the parents too.
You know,
the parents can be private about,
yes,
it too.
That's a good point.
But yeah, once you have an offer,
right,
I mean, I like it if players have multiple offers. So if you talk about one offer and,
yes,
then another school, you know, you don't want other schools to know about all this either necessarily. You know, like it's just a private thing.
Right.
And then you once you verbally commit, I like my players to talk to the coach and be like, hey, is it okay if I post on social media now? Like get
there
the college
go.
Coach's,
yes,
permission.
That's cool, yeah.
And they always say, of course, you know, but I think it's a respectful thing.
Right.
And when you're ready to do
point.
That. to make it public. But yeah, so another, as far as misconceptions, I think one would be the recruiting services that you can partake in, you know, like NCSA, sports recruits, field level, NSR, like there's so many kind of online recruiting services. And I get, you know, one misconception can be that they don't help, and another one can be that they make it all great for you and you don't have to do anything. So there's like, I hear both, you know, but my take on that is use them to help you in your recruiting process, but you still have to own the process and you still have to do the work. So, and I also think you don't pay them. So they all have the free profiles that you can use. So I've had a lot of players that have paid them, you know, the gold level at $1,200 or whatever it is. And then they're like, we're having, nothing's happening. We don't know what to do. And then they hire me. And I keep my prices, you know, low that are manageable. You know, I have different levels of working with me that aren't outrageous because I know how much, how expensive club volleyball is since traveling and everything. So I think, you know, sign up. University Athlete is a must, and that's not a recruiting service necessarily, but it's like a profile that you need so that coaches can find you at the tournaments and you want that updated. That's how they look up a player. Like if I say, you know, could you watch so-and-so? They'd be like, let me find her on University Athlete. It's a must.
That's a must.
NCSA or sports recruits, Captain U, all of those, the free profile is a nice thing. Sports recruits, my daughter's on that. Just, I like that because it's free. And then some schools come out of the woodwork that you didn't even know existed, you know, and they, so you won't see the Power Five conferences necessarily on those recruiting services because they don't need to do that. But, you know, you'll see the D2s, D3s from everywhere. All of a sudden they've seen your video and they reach out to you. And I just like it as another way to populate the list. Your recruiting list. It's, you know, how do I find more schools that are interested in me? And then that also helps you determine your level. So if you're getting camp brochures from certain schools, if you're getting, you know, schools reaching out to you from sports recruits and in who at wherever and CSA, that tells you, oh, if they're interested in me, they must think I'm their level, you know, and you don't want to bank on that, but it's just more information. I like to look at, it's an indicator.
It's an indicator.
Yeah, and like a camp brochure or being, you know, a mass email from a school to attend their clinic or camp. That's also an indicator. But then I say, okay, you know, you just got a camp invite from Pepperdine. Well, that means you might be their level of play. Well, what about the rest of the schools in that conference? You know, so you look at of the 10 schools in the conference, for example, where would I be interested in going? If I'm the level of Pepperdine, then I might be the level of the rest of the conference. So I love that to populate the list.
If I could add one, what I think to be misconception is that it will be the recruiting process that is, that it will be a smooth process. Did you agree with
that? No, I mean...
it's not going to be smooth.
You just take it every day, day by day, and you can't, it's hard. The girls, I mean, I have to say, you know, we're talking about high school girls and we freak out. They freak out sometimes, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think parents can help in keeping them calm and just focused and in what's important and keep moving forward. If you hear a no from a school, you can't take it personally and you just have to keep moving forward. And you want to find the perfect fit is a school that really wants you and you really want to go there. And there should be a celebratory excitement about that. So the more schools that you can get to that point, that's why if you start with 30 or 40 schools, you could end with 5. Because of the new rule change, you can't commit before June 15th of your sophomore year. But if a freshman starts the process, I mean, I would hope they're committed by the end of their junior year, you know? So it's right. long. Okay. It's long.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, earlier. Right.
And you mentioned something to me when we were talking prior about when they go on their visits, that they should have an offer already from that.
Well, program. They should know what's on the table, you know, so an unofficial okay. visit is, you know, the player pays for everything. The school has them come. And again, it's once we get past the coronavirus and it'll happen again. Right now it could happen after September 1st of 2020, unless they extend okay. the dead period longer. But basically the unofficial visit is, you know, I have my players propose it to coaches too. So they know they need them in their grad right. year. They know there's interest level, the level of play. They've talked on the phone. And then a player would say, you know, I would love to come in for a visit if you think that's possible, blah, right. blah, blah. Like something, you know, where you're not like, I'm coming for a visit, but you're asking, you know, and then,
right,
and then
right.
the coach, you know, would say, yeah, we would love to have you. Let's look at these dates. And then you start, you know, through email or whatever, set a date, and then you get an itinerary, but you don't get to this point where you're traveling and spending a day or an overnight at a college where it's a walk-on and you don't even know that. Back to what is the recruiting process, you know, the target list, the video, the intro email, the check-in emails, the phone calls, going on a visit is like 99% necessary. I've had two players because of coronavirus commit without solid visits. But that was obviously okay. way out of the norm. So the coach wants to know that the right. player's been on campus and that she's comfortable on campus. So the coach wants that. They want to get to meet her, her parents, kind of get a feel for her as a person and everything. And then she's got to right. see the campus. And so the visit has the academic advisor meeting. You see the weight room. You talk to the weightlifting coach, sometimes the athletic trainer. You meet with the head coach. You go on a tour of the campus. But you don't do all that until you know it's a full scholarship. It's a partial. It's D3 is no scholarship, you know, but you can apply for the right. financial aid. You could get an academic scholarship or, you know, all the schools, almost all of them have academic money, depending on how competitive it is academically, you know, Ivy League schools, mm-hmm. there's no scholarships there. So, you know, you have to know that before you go, because you don't want to be sitting there right. like, oh, I thought it was full scholarship. It's a walk-on, you know, and a coach would never, right. it would never, I've never had a coach know that it's a walk-on spot and not tell the player before they come for a visit. But I have had, and this is a right. whole nother topic we talked about earlier too, I have had an assistant coach be recruiting the player, have the player come to the school, and then the head coach go, oh, I didn't know you were coming.
Wow.
Or I should say wow. it wasn't one yeah. of my it wasn't one of my players, it was somebody that I know that happened, because I wouldn't let that okay. happen with one of my players. But yeah, you just don't want that.
Right.
You want the whole coaching staff to know. So back to the emailing, all the emails are to the head coach and the first assistant or associate head coach, and you're CCing the second assistant or third coach. And then the third coach yep. responds to your email. Then you CC the head coach and the other coach. Like all the coaches are on your emails, your responses. And you do that because you want the right. whole staff to know you. You want the whole staff to see your video, because they're the ones that decide on who gets the offer and where you are on their list and where you rank. Right. They all sit in meetings mm-hmm. and they talk about it. So you don't want one coach to love right. you and, oh, I saw her play here and she's great on the phone and really nice family, and the other coaches have no clue who you are.
Good point. Absolutely. The other misconception that I hear all the time is my grades don't matter if I'm good enough at volleyball. Do you agree with that?
No.
Or what's your take on
I that? Don't agree. I schools, there's, you know, a little bit lower of a standard to get in for an athlete. than a regular student. But you can't get in if, I mean, there's actual minimums, like 2 point CAA minimums. And then as a junior or going into your junior year, as a junior, you need to get into the NCAA Eligibility Center and get that NCAA number. And then that's where they check your number, your ID number, to determine that you're eligible. And they have to do that. But you can't go on a visit if you're not eligible to play in the NCAA. I mean, you can, but they wouldn't want you to. So, totally. I mean, it's not like, oh, well, we can get her in if she has like a below a 2 point or something. They can't.
Right. The better the grades, yeah, the better for you, basically.
You don't want that to be a factor that deters you. Right. And some kids are right. just super brainy, and that's just the way they are, and that's not even an issue. You know, you've got the 4.5s right. and all of that. And if that's the case, that all goes in the subject line of emails. But if you've got a 3.2, right. you know, and you're more of an average student, that's okay. Just, you know, keep it there right. and keep working. And then really
right.
be cognizant of the major that you choose too, because, you know, some schools have a lot higher, right. like say you want to be, you know, a biology major or business or something, that you have to have a minimum GPA of 3.8 or something, then, you know, if you have a lower GPA, make sure that the area of study that you want, you can get into the schools on your list.
That's a great point, for sure. Now, I know you had a couple of points you wanted to make to everyone, and like sort of themes that you stand for. And I love these, and I was hoping that you'd share a couple of these with everyone. Sort of
have to own the process, and you have to take the action for sure. And then and I said it earlier, is a huge key is they have to need your position in your grad year. And that's just like the number one thing you have to find out. And so I really stress that. And then you have to keep emailing. I've had coaches say, I haven't heard from her, so we took her off our list. So I like, you know, there's nothing wrong with every 2 weeks. And then the other thing that, you know, you own your process, you find out if they need your position in your grad year, you keep in touch every couple weeks, and you create reasons, you know, well, why do they might get sick of me, like I'm bugging them, but maybe you have video of yourself like weightlifting, doing kettlebell swings, or doing some plyo workout with some teammates or something, or private lesson, like right now, you know, that's group lessons, private lessons, just a quick minute video of that. Anything updates, well, we just found out school's going to be online this fall, or whatever, you know, we just got back from our trip. My family and I went on, we went here, we went there, like, and then you always want to ask the coach, how are things going with the team? How are they doing? You know, you can ask questions of them too, but it's just every 2 weeks, keeping in touch at least. And then if you don't hear back from them, my number is like 5 times you've reached out. So you've done your intro email and then like every week to 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, 5 times, and you never hear back, then I mean, it's okay to take them off your list or just kind of push them off to the side. And then you'll probably hear back from that coach. Oh, I'm sorry. It took me so long. I had this and that going on, you know? So it's not like you're going to email them every 2 weeks for the next year and they never respond.
You know? Right, right. And I know you're a big proponent of breaking through some of the financial barriers that like club volleyball presents and the recruiting process presents. So could you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's something that kind of bothers me. It's, you know, what if there's these amazing athletes somewhere that, you know, good volleyball players, but they just don't get a chance to play in college because they're just not like at the top club, or, you know, players that are at, I don't want to say lower level clubs, but maybe smaller clubs in more rural areas that are less expensive. Maybe they go to some tournaments that are not across the country, but, you know, only to volleyball festival or only to JOs or something. Like, that's where I liked, well, first you have to own the process and you have to reach out, but because the coaches don't know all that, but they, you know, mm-hmm. the recruiting services, I would say do those, get on those platforms, and they're free, the free profiles, mm-hmm. do that. And then create your list, reach out, and really prepare the coaches to watch you at those tournaments. The fewer tournaments you're at, the smaller tournaments, just see if they're going to be there. Do they have one-day clinics where you could just, they're less expensive, you know, those one-day pop-up clinics. Sending them yep. video, you know, it's all stuff that you can do, even if you're not on a top team in the country or a top club. They will watch you play on court 70. If you've emailed them, right. they like your highlight video. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've talked to you on the phone or not, but they'll come by the court. They don't care the court number. They don't care. They don't care right. if you're on the threes or you're on, you know, whatever club, whatever team.
Whatever team.
Matters.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to watch you. What does your platform look like? What is your movement on the court? What is your approach, your arm swing? I mean, it does help to be playing at a higher level where the game is faster, because the college coach has to stand there and imagine, could this girl play at the speed of our game in our conference, you know? So if they're watching you right. play a really bad team, they're still going to make assessments of your ability because you're moving and you're jumping and you're playing. But, you know, it is harder, especially as a defender and passer. And you probably agree, if you're passing easy serves and really super easy digs, it's hard for like a D1 top coach to imagine you doing it, playing at a higher level. But like hitting and that type of right. thing, you can see that without really, doesn't matter who's on the other side of the net. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Good
so,
point. And I would say whatever level you're at, just yeah. ball out, like just play as yeah. well as you can. If you're on court 70, dominate right. court 70, yeah. you know what I mean? And coaches will notice that. I think that's a misconception that, oh, right. they won't come and look here.
Oh
like you
gosh,
said, if you've done your work, then
they don't care.
Yeah, such a
yeah.
good point.
They just don't, they just want to find the players that will help make their program better. They don't care where you're from. They don't care how much, you know, your household income is or anything. It's just, they just want to see great players with good character, you know, that the good grades always help for sure. Financial barrier, it's something that people think is real, but you can overcome it, but you have to take the action necessary to do that. And, you know, then yes. I'd say that to all players, but just because you're at a smaller club, less expensive rural area, doesn't mean you can't be recruited. And they can watch you play. I mean, they
such
don't recruit during high school season normally, but you can still take really good video of your high school games and you can still invite them to your games.
Yep.
I've had some yep. coaches. So I'm in San Diego. I had a coach who was going to play USD be willing mm-hmm. to watch a high school player within that trip. You know what I mean? At a high school game.
Right.
So yep. it's not unheard mm-hmm. of.
Good point. Just to let them know how they can get in contact
sure,
with you.
Of course. My website is proactivevolley.com. So just all one word, Proactive Volley. And you can reach me through that. I have Diane with two N's, D-I-A-N-N-E at proactivevolley.com. Right, I'm posting articles on there, and then they could join my email list. So I'm sending out weekly emails to my people that want to hear from me on my email list, and just we can correspond that way too.
Cool. Well, I know there's been so much good information in this, so thank you so much.
It's difficult, because it will at different points, and just know that, you know, the harder you work and just keep taking those steps forward to keep in touch and be consistent with your contact with coaches, that something will come through. And it's just really fun to play in college and be a collegiate athlete. So I think it's a fun dream that I love to help players with.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to The Recruiting Process with Diane Denekashe on the Volley Nerd Podcast. Be sure to check us out on Instagram and TikTok at The Volley Nerd Podcast. And give us some feedback on what you'd like to hear or who you'd like to hear from. Volley on!